Europe gets a huge amount of its energy from natural gas. It uses it to power everything from factories to homes. And its main supplier for that natural gas is Russia. But now, Russia has turned off the spigot. It throttled the Nord Stream pipeline, the main way Europe gets the natural gas.
Nord Stream 1 pipeline was unexpectedly shut on Saturday.
The Kremlin says Western sanctions forced their hands and said that the shutdown would be long-lasting.
The Kremlin says deliveries will only be resumed if Western sanctions on Russia are lifted.
It's a situation Europe has feared ever since Russia first invaded Ukraine earlier this year.
Europe's big fear once the war broke out was that Russia would use its really dominant position as Europe's main gas supplier to interfere with the economy.
That's our colleague Joe Wallace. He covers energy markets from London. He says the Nord Stream shutdown is sending natural gas prices in Europe soaring and forcing countries there to scramble.
Cutting off the natural gas to Europe through Nord Stream creates a massive problem for the winter for a lot of European industry and a lot of pain for households and real people.
Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Ryan Knudsen. It's Thursday, September 8th. Coming up on the show, how Russia gained the upper hand in the energy battle and what it means for the West.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. If you're like most people, you've had your fair share of financial questions. Questions like, will you be able to afford a third kid? Will you be able to do everything you want when you retire? What if you outlive your savings? Empower knows these questions can be stressful, so they're here to help answer your what-ifs and empower what's next. Join 18 million Americans and take control of your financial future. Tap the banner to learn more or visit empower.com.
Oil and natural gas are key to Russia's economy. Together, they make up nearly half of the country's federal revenue.
So I think that the way to think about the two industries is that they're complementary. So oil is the big money spinner. Russia, if you include both crude oil, which is the black stuff that comes out of the ground, and then like gasoline and diesel, Russia is the single biggest exporter of oil in the whole world, bigger than the US, bigger than Saudi. And that brings in a huge amount of revenue. Natural gas is, it brings in money, but less.
Natural gas might bring in less revenue, but it gives Russia a great deal of power. Over the years, Europe has become heavily dependent on it because it's cheap, and because countries like Germany thought that buying Russian gas would help strengthen diplomatic ties. So when the war in Ukraine started and the West wanted to impose sanctions, they had to do so delicately.
The West unleashed sanctions on Russia before and after the war broke out, but they really tried to shield energy, partly because, you know, Russia is such a big supplier of natural gas and coal and oil that if the Russian energy industry shut down, then prices would shoot up, and that is obviously a particular concern with inflation so high right now. So they tried to carve energy out.
But companies in the West that buy and sell oil were still rattled, and they took it upon themselves to stay away from Russian oil anyway.
Companies went beyond the sanctions, and many of them stopped buying Russian oil, maybe only for a few weeks, but they did, and the market froze up, and the price shot through the roof. And since then, officials, especially in the US, have been trying to work to make sure the Russian oil still gets out onto the market to try and bring prices down, ultimately for drivers in the States.
Companies were essentially self-sanctioning, and then the US banned Russian oil imports. And the EU started to consider similar plans. As a result, Russian oil took a hit. No one wanted to buy it, and its value was tanking. But at the same time, that also made Russian oil really cheap. So soon enough, Moscow found new customers. And suddenly, Russia saw a way to turn things around.
First of all, new buyers stepped in. Russian oil was suddenly really cheap. It was like $35 a barrel cheaper than, you know, a cargo of oil from the North Sea. And so India in particular, India went from importing very little Russian oil to importing like 1 million barrels a day within weeks of the war breaking out. That was just a huge financial incentive if you didn't find it distasteful to buy Russian oil and make a profit doing so, and also just to, you know, supply your customers with oil.
Russia's found new customers in countries that remain neutral on the Ukraine invasion, like India, but also other huge markets, like China and Turkey. And even Saudi Arabia started buying it.
So what Saudi has done is it imports what's called fuel oil, which is a kind of, it's not quite crude oil, it's been refined a bit, but it's still kind of dense and cheap. They import that, and they have been burning it in their power stations to produce electricity, which they need in great quantities during the summer when it's very hot in the Gulf. And what that allows Saudi to do is it means that it frees its hands to sell the Saudi-produced crude oil that it had been burning those power plants to, say, Europe or the US. And it's buying Russian oil at a very cheap price because Russian oil still has a big discount, and it's selling its own oil at the full market price, so it's just profiting from that.
The Saudi government couldn't be reached for comment. It's not just governments, though. Smaller private traders outside of Europe, in places like Dubai, also got in on Russian oil. And Joe says a lot of those trading companies are finding ways to hide the fact that their oil is coming from Russia so that they can sell a lot of it and turn a bigger profit.
How is that possible? I feel like things in the modern world are so tracked so tightly that it's hard to imagine how something could just, like, show up on a ship somewhere.
I think what you have to understand is the oil market is really opaque. Trades are private, they're negotiated privately between traders. The terms are really complex. People move things from ship to ship. You can track these ships much better than you could, say, 20 years ago. But, you know, if you really want to cover what you're doing, you can do it. As we've seen in Iran, Iranian oil is still traded, even though Iranian oil is sanctioned by the US, but it still gets out.
And so, at least for now, the Russian oil market is back on its feet.
For now, it's going gangbusters. So Russia's earning about $20 billion on average per month from oil exports this year. It was up from about less than $15 billion last year on average.
Russia's rebounding oil market undermines Western efforts in the Ukraine war, and it gives Russian President Vladimir Putin an advantage.
The fact that Moscow is earning so much money from oil, it means that it can be a bit more cavalier in how it uses natural gas as this kind of economic weapon against Europe, because it's got all the money coming in from oil, so it can afford to sell less gas to Europe and sacrifice that revenue. Yeah, I mean, the huge question this winter is whether Europe backs down or whether it sticks out this kind of energy conflict.
How Europe and the West intend to fight back? That's after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/journal. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by GlobalX ETFs. Buzz around artificial intelligence is seemingly everywhere. Is your portfolio keeping up? Consider the GlobalX Artificial Intelligence and Technology ETF, ticker AIQ, which invests in dozens of stocks at the leading edge of this disruption. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Technology companies can be affected by rapid product obsolescence and intense industry competition. Before investing carefully, consider the fund's objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in the full or summary prospectus at globalxetfs.com. Read carefully. Distributed by SEI Investments Distribution Company.
The idea that Russia would shut down the Nord Stream pipeline was always a looming threat. Even before Russia invaded Ukraine, Joe says there were warning signs that relying on Russia for energy wasn't a great idea.
The US warned Europe and Germany in particular for years that relying on Russia for a big proportion of their energy needs was a real risk, because Russia had in the past used energy as a weapon against countries in Eastern Europe in particular.
A couple months ago, Russia started to throttle back the amount of natural gas it was supplying to Europe. It wasn't an all-out shutdown, but it was enough to put a strain on Europe and push up energy prices. Joe says that usually Russia will give technical excuses for these disruptions.
Moscow never says, we're just going to cut off the gas and hurt you because you're supporting Ukraine. They'll say, a turbine is broken, or the main pumping station on the biggest pipeline, Nord Stream, has to have some maintenance.
Over the weekend, when the Nord Stream shut down, Moscow again cited technical problems and said that because of that, the pipeline wouldn't open for the foreseeable future.
The people, you know, we've spoken to have said that is not true, and they have spare parts and they could fix it and they could send the gas if they wanted to. And they could send the gas through other routes into Europe, but they're not doing so, which is one of the signs that this is a geopolitical move. It's an attempt to use gas as like an economic weapon rather than a legitimate practical or technical, you know, problem. But the strategy appears to be that by inflicting a huge amount of economic pain on Europe, it can lead Germany and others to both to relax sanctions on Russia, to stop sending military support to Ukraine, and ultimately perhaps to go to President Zelensky and say, look, you've got to cut a deal with Russia because we can't stomach this pain any longer.
Meanwhile, European leaders have been scrambling to find an alternative source of natural gas. They've turned to places like Norway, Qatar, and the U.S. And Joe says that's offered some relief, but it's more expensive, and energy bills are going up.
What might it mean for European industries that rely on natural gas?
Well, a lot of them are shutting down already, especially the most energy-intensive industries like glass and metals. And you don't have to buy Russian gas directly to be affected. You just have to buy gas or electricity on the open market, and then the price of that power and that natural gas is many, many times higher than it was before the war. Thinking longer term, it kind of undermines, like, if you think about European manufacturing and industry, one way in which it is trying to stay competitive globally with the likes of China and the US is by running on cheap Russian gas. That's the big picture. And that's not going to come anymore. So that is another blow against European industry.
European countries are now bracing for what could be a harsh winter.
I mean, most governments now have these rationing plans where they're trying to ultimately protect the most vulnerable, hospitals, pensioners, households. Those would be the last people and organizations to have the gas cut off, the natural gas cut off. A related risk is not just that the natural gas runs out, but that people just can't afford to heat their homes because the price is so high. Most governments are putting in place or preparing some kind of relief package. It differs by country, but governments are paying tens of billions of euros and dollars to try and keep the price down for consumers.
Closing the Nord Stream pipeline is hurting Europe just as Russia might have intended. But the move might also hurt Russia, too.
With natural gas, it flows mainly through pipelines. So the stuff that's been going to Europe, you can't suddenly ship it to China in a heartbeat. You really have to build new pipelines, which will cost billions of dollars, probably tens of billions of dollars, take many years, and then you'll have to engage with China in a really tough negotiation. But the big risk is that the Russian natural gas industry can't replace Europe as a buyer, and then it starts to kind of nosedive and production declines and it doesn't get the revenue and people lose their jobs. So yeah, there's a big economic risk for Russia.
There's no clear end to the current back and forth. In December, a European ban on all sea shipments of Russian crude oil will go into effect. And in February, Europe will ban some Russian diesel and gasoline imports too.
And then potentially more importantly, Europe is planning to ban financial services companies from providing insurance, from insuring cargoes of Russian oil. And that's a huge deal because EU and UK insure about 95% of the world's oil trade. And so if those ships carrying Russian oil can't be insured, they're going to find it difficult to get from Russia's Baltic ports to Russia's new buyers in India and China and elsewhere.
Meanwhile, the US is trying to find a middle ground. It wants to keep Russian oil flowing, but still limit Putin's ability to profit from it. To do this, it's working with key allies, known as the Group of Seven, to put a price cap on Russian crude oil. But Putin attacked this idea yesterday and threatened more retaliation.
А что, будут приниматься какие-то решения политического характера, противоречащие контракту? Но мы их просто выполнять не будем.
He said Russia won't deliver anything, oil, gas, coal, if it, quote, contradicts our interests.
So what do you think that this all means for the war in Ukraine, which is what this is all ultimately about?
I mean, the fact that Europe seems wants to stick the course and in some ways is preparing even tougher sanctions suggests that Western funding and weapons will keep on flowing to Ukraine. And they, of course, have been totally crucial in turning the tide in the war. On the other hand, the fact that the gas price and oil price is so high means that the Kremlin has more money flowing in with which to fund that war. In some ways, it's kind of a battle of the wills. Russia seems to be betting that it can break Europe's will this winter by pushing natural gas prices so high and inflation so high that it can stop Europe supporting Ukraine or even relax sanctions over the winter. And for Europe, what European officials and companies are trying to do is just to get through this period, get to the other side, and ultimately have secure, more reliable, more diverse energy supplies for the future.
That's all for today, Thursday, September 8th. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. Additional reporting in this episode by Anna Hertenstein, Yorgi Konchev, Kim Mackerel, and William Boston. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.